Guys on a Break for Frogger podcast, check the GMT website to get the right time. Things going smooth.
Okay.
Everyone rather quiet, not really talking much.
Ooh, bad bastion joke, stop it.
Guy up in Galston needs to shut the hell up.
Why'd you sound like a character of Red Dead Redemption?
He talking all jibber jabbering and stuff.
Jibber jabber! Mr. T in Red Dead Redemption you've now gone to. You, sir, are making no sense.
Guy in Galston ends up talking about his own life too much. Talking all the time about some Mr. T shit. Guy down in Gretna has a good laugh. Some other guy from Newcastle just sits there all quiet. He don't know what the hell going on. He obviously not played the game in which this joke is based on.
Was it made in the 80s?
No, it was not made in the 80s.
I'm better than...
Never mind. Let's get to the theme song. Ladies and gentlemen, episode 2.8 of Break for Frogger. This is it.
What a fun.
I like doing those kind of things. I like doing. Did everyone like that little intro?
It was good fun.
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
You thoroughly enjoyed it. That's awesome. That's excellent. Yes. Then excellent. My name's Cameron Phillips, as you should probably know by now. When I say ad nauseum every single month, but I'm the one that's been on every single one of these episodes, so I'm allowed to say that. To my left, I am. I'm taking charge. I am.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Thanks. Yeah. To my left is, as you probably just heard, Mr. Tom Oates.
Oh, yeah.
To my right is the Geordie one, Geordie Allen. And on front of me in digital audio form is Ewan Taylor. Everyone say
good
hello.
Evening.
Yeah, good evening. Good evening. Good evening.
Hello.
How is everyone?
Very
good. Welcome. Good, good.
You all well?
All good?
All
yeah.
good?
Exceptionally so.
Exceptionally so. Oh, right.
Oh, exceptionally.
Exceptionally.
Exceptual?
Exceptual?
Exceptual? That's not a word.
Asexually?
We're not worms.
Why are we playing Scrabble?
I don't know. Suddenly it's gone into a Scrabble kind of thing. Right. Shall we crack on then? Shall we crack on with what you're playing? Okay.
Let's do that.
Right. What you're playing, the first person to step forward for this, I think, should be Al.
Nout.
Nout?
Literally nothing.
Like nothing.
Nout.
Like, no.
I've been moving.
I don't know what to say.
I've been moving house.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And I have my Xbox been in the box. And
Your Xbox is in a box.
Yeah. And nout would be the answer.
No. Hopscotch.
Although I did buy a game. Does that count?
Well, have you played? Well, go on. Tell us about what you bought then.
I bought The Thing for the PlayStation 2.
The Thing?
The Thing, based on the movie.
I had this.
I had it ages ago and I didn't really like it, so I thought I'd buy the game for $1.99.
I never really got into it, no.
But I've been reading the comics and stuff, so I thought I'd buy the game.
And the film was on telly the other night.
Oh, I missed it. I would have wanted to see that.
It was on ITV 4 or something ridiculous.
Oh, it's a good,
like that.
Really good film. Really like it.
A couple of nights ago.
But this game's all right. I remember being quite difficult in places.
I seem to remember when I played it that it was okay, because obviously it's got the same kind of like tense atmosphere in as the film has, in that anyone can be the thing.
Yeah.
But apparently there are certain people that have to be the thing in order for the story to continue.
Right.
So you'll blood test them, and then 5 minutes, and they'll be clear. And then 5 minutes later, they'll be the thing, because the storyline dictates that they have to be.
Right.
But the game couldn't quite encompass it all in properly like that. So that was apparently one big flaw I remember coming against when I played it a few years ago.
Because I remember when you get bored, you can shoot your teammates and then they think you're the thing.
Yeah, and then turn around. Like, yeah.
I'm not the thing, I'm just bored and want to shoot you, so there you go.
Yeah, it was an excuse that Kurt Russell gives in the film, I believe.
Never mind. So I bought that, and that's the only computer game thing I've really done this month, I'm afraid. I want to go back on Xbox Live, but I haven't got the internet either. So it's all sad in my gaming life at the moment, all sad.
Everybody say, aw.
Aww. No, I don't want to. Fuck him.
That's really nice of you.
I know.
Real nice. So is that you done then, Al? Is that...
Yeah, unless you want to hear about the rest of my life stories.
Well, are we wise asking how the move's going, or is this bit going to get edited out?
No, it's all right. It's doing all right. We're just about in there, and a few boxes need unpacked. Well, most of the boxes need unpacked.
Right.
I've got Sky up and running, which is the main thing.
That's good.
And that's it. It's doing all right at the moment.
How many hubs on the cooker are working? Because it was three last time.
No. These repaired the fourth one. We used it last night. We just need the washing machine fixed. That's the only thing.
I think it was a case of getting actual fittings for the washing machine last night.
It is. Right. I've looked on eBay. I can buy them off eBay.
Hey.
Is there anything you can't get off eBay?
Not really.
So, yes, what 2.5 meter washing machine hose. That's what I'm going to
A round of applause for the washing hose. A round of applause for Al's 2.5 meter long hose.
It comes in fact, this is a dilemma you can help me out in.
Oh, Christ.
It comes in red or blue. Which colour do I get?
Well,
blue is the traditional colour.
Blue is the traditional, yes.
But
certainly.
The red's out there, you know, it's out there, it's happening behind the washer.
I would suggest that this is going behind your washing machine, so who would genuinely give a fuck, but...
It's the principle of the thing, you know?
Well, if it's the principle of the thing, I'd go for blue.
Alright then, I'll get blue then.
Well, I'm glad I've made this influential
absolute
decision.
Absolute dejection there from... Absolute dejection.
What, do you want red then?
Red's a bit different, you know, it's a bit different.
Edgy.
Oh, yeah.
Can you not get blue and red striped like it's a candy cone or something? Or a bit of Edinburgh Rock?
I don't think they've got that much right in washing machine hoses.
You could paint your own on your text.
I might have to, yeah.
How did we got into this conversation?
I don't know.
If you'd have 10 minutes ago taken a bet and said, what are they going to start talking about 7 minutes into this episode? It was going to be like... How's about washing machine pipes? And you would have gone, yeah, fuck off.
We're nothing if not random.
We're nothing if not random.
And then I've got to download the economy wash once I've got it.
Oh,
callback.
Achievement unlocked, year-old joke, 25G. Right, okay, so are you done?
Yes, that's me done for
He's
now.
Gone. All right, never mind.
You know, I want to stop before I get into the excitement of the kitchen carpet. You know, we'll not go there.
Right, we might even wonder what colour your runners should be. Shit. Right, anyway, Tom.
Hello,
what have you been playing?
Sadly, much to my dismay, my Xbox is still down in South Wales.
This is heading alarmingly the same way.
No, it's not.
All right.
You got the washing machine, Tom.
Yes.
What colour are your hoses?
I have no idea. I daren't look behind it.
All right, okay.
This month, because of obvious console-related issues, I've been forced onto mobile gaming. I don't know if I've mentioned it before, but I have the Sony Xperia Play phone, so...
I think we mentioned it a couple of months ago in your absence. I'm not sure.
Sure,
but, anyway, whatever.
So I've been kind of struggling to find a proper use for it. I bought it under the gimmick of it having the, you know, full PlayStation controls there. And... I hadn't found any use for them up until now. There was a Crash Bandicoot. What are you smirking at?
Because I remember you downloaded Crash Bandicoot when you were in my house when you got out of the box.
Okay.
And I remember thinking, oh, it's Crash Bandicoot. And we had a game of Crash Bandicoot. And it was like, it looks like Crash Bandicoot. It's just like PS1 Crash Bandicoot.
Crash Bandicoot gets boring after a while.
It fucking does.
Luckily for me, and we've been here before.
Yes.
Numerous times.
Yes.
A new game was released recently
for
the Xperia Play. That game being Minecraft Pocket Edition.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, yes.
Oh, shit.
So that's been taking up a large portion of my gaming time. I have been sitting and losing the odd hour to it in miniature building projects.
Right.
So...
It's in alpha at the moment. It's nothing compared to the stage that the actual...
The PC version
of Minecraft is far beyond what this is capable of at the moment. It's back initially, essentially, to what Minecraft... was like in its very first alpha phase. It had this in-dev format before it became kind of properly picked up by everyone, where you could literally build anything you want. There was no real mining physics. You know, the blocks would just break. And it's basically back to that. It's very, very easy to build stuff on it, but there's no real mining. There's no tools. Essentially, whereas Minecraft, the PC version, is, it has this element of being kind of infinite. The world expands as you're playing through it. This is very limited. I have already found the edge of the playable area, and you cannot go beyond that. It will not generate anything beyond that. So I assume that you fill the allotted area up, and then you start a new map and move through that. But, you know, it's looking promising. No health and stuff like that. But they are saying they're taking suggestions from the community and going to convert that into content. And
is this... This sounds like a miniaturized version of Minecraft.
Essentially.
Is it? Yeah, but is it going to remain that way to fit it onto the platform it's on, i.e. the mobile phone thing?
I don't imagine
so. Or
are
they going to expand it?
Because, you know, one of the biggest things for the modern mobile gaming is Java. Java's heavily used for a lot of applications, and Java is what Minecraft runs in. So it's essentially they are just finding their feet in the kind of Android format.
Aye.
Because I think it's only available for Android, and I'm pretty sure that the only phone it'll play on properly is the Xperia Play, because it does rely on that control system. Mm-hmm. You do because it's an FPS, essentially, in its stylized nature.
It was really smooth when I had a crack at it.
Yeah, I mean, it's brilliant.
When you handed me your phone and gave us a wee sort of 10-minute blast, it was impressively smooth.
You know, seeing me playing with the phone at times, that I've struggled to kind of understand the point, because the Xperia Play has two analog touch-sensitive areas to like replace the analog sticks.
Yeah.
And I'd struggle to get used to them. But Minecraft applies them so well.
Right.
You know, it's very, very smooth.
Yeah.
It impresses me.
It is. I was quite impressed with it being a mobile phone game, you know what I mean?
But, you know, with modern phones having expandable memory abilities, you know, that phone accepts cards up to 32 gigabyte.
Yeah.
So with that in place, plus the fact that it runs in Java, I see no reason why it couldn't just, as long as they get to grips with
the
system, it could just build up to be as good as Minecraft
complex on PC version.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've got to admit to wanting to get the Xbox version when it comes out in November.
It looks
November.
Interesting.
Me too.
Yeah,
oh,
I know.
Good man.
There was something about... Me too. Is it that a download game? Is it like an arcade game, or are they releasing a physical disc release for it?
I think it's going to be an arcade game, I think.
I was under the
impression it was an arcade game, yeah.
Yeah,
but
it wouldn't be worth it for a disc release, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
the way it's upgraded, it's just kind of upgraded as it goes along.
Yeah, I think they've already admitted that it won't be updated anywhere near as often as the PC version is.
You can't do that.
Exactly. So I don't think they can do sort of wholesale changes in it that way. But certainly worth it. Some entertaining game.
Absolutely, I'll probably buy it too, to be honest.
You may as well just send a check this man's house for like a numbered number. Please have all my money, thank you.
Hey, I've got no qualms with that. They're impressing me. They're starting to develop other games now as well, which is, I can't remember what the title.
Dangerous.
I can't remember the title of the game, but they have just announced that they've got a new game that they're working on. You know, it's someone who was working alongside Notch, has picked up another project, and the Mojang Studios are figureheading it. So,
oh, cool.
They are starting to release and develop other games.
So it'll be another 3 months before they're picked up by EA, then?
Possibly.
Yeah. Never mind. Anyway. Ewan!
Hello! Yes, this month I have been mostly playing one of the Summer of Arcade titles on Xbox Live in the form of Supergiant Games is Bastion.
Hey!
May have had a reference at the beginning of the show, I don't quite
know. I've no idea, I just
it just
felt like talking that way.
But I think Bastion was the first of this year's Summer of Arcade Games.
Yes, I think From Dust came a week later. We do have a review of From Dust later on, by the way. I did one.
Yay!
So we've got From Dust covered.
I think from what I've read and from what I've played of the game, Bastion set the bar really high this year for the Summer of Arcade. Basically, it's an action RPG at heart. You take the role of the kid, who is basically a silent character, and basically what's happened is the Calamity has struck, which was a catastrophic event that basically fractured the world into many different pieces and led to infestation of a variety of wonderfully hostile creatures. So, as you may guess, your role in the whole game is to take out the bad guys, rebuild the world, and bring everyone back to the way it was. Throughout the whole story, your tale is narrated by I don't know, the whatever in my notes is a sultry black man, would that be appropriate?
I think the phrase I've heard for the guy that narrates Bastion is whiskey soaked.
That's a good
old
one.
Old Southern bourbon, Jack Daniels-esque.
Old Southern bourbon,
I would go along with that.
Did you just say sultry, Ewan?
Yes.
You're making me think of the Old Spice man.
That's not him. Not the.
It'd be funny if it was, though. I've got you a sword for killing that dragon you hate. Look at me, it's turned into diamonds. I'm on a horse.
Now the diamonds have turned into blood, now you're dead.
No, they banned that one.
Oh, did they? Oh,
yeah,
sorry. Well, as it turns out, the narrator is actually one of the characters in the game called the Old Man, which is original.
Yeah, because I played the demo and you meet him.
Yeah.
Like,
yes, you do.
In the latter bit of the demo, which is obviously the start of the game, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, he basically kind of fills in the blanks, and you meet other characters along the way that fills in some of the backstory. At heart, it is an action RPG. You've got leveling up to do, you've got weapons to collect, those you can upgrade. You've got weapons such as a giant kale hammer, a war machete, which is just a large sword,
yep.
A bow and arrow, and my favourite weapon I've found so far is the scrap musket, which is basically, imagine a musket, but imagine it's got the spread and power of a shotgun.
Oh, awesome.
It's very, very cool. And in amongst flying to the different worlds, you can also do kind of off to the side challenges, which are weapon specific. So these are there to get your skill at some weapons. So say, for example, you've got the scrap musket and you're like, I could maybe do a little bit better to this. And say you've just recently bought an upgrade for it. You can take it to these kind of trialing grounds. And depending on what the challenge is, if you beat the challenge in the quickest time possible, there's three levels of prizes it gives you. And obviously the prizes kind of increase in their usefulness as they go up. And I found myself, if I can't really bother going on to the next level, I'll go on to one of the challenges, the challenge kind of islands, and just see if I can get the next bit.
Cool.
And if many hours have been lost swearing at the thing going, damn you, I've one more shot. Say you've got to do this thing under 10 shots and you're on the actual 10th shot itself, you can't go over. And it does get quite tense at times.
Yeah, yeah. Do you want to know what this game reminded me of in a big way?
Go on.
Have you ever played, and this is going back a bit, an NES game called Solstice?
Yay!
I haven't played it.
Al's remembered it.
I've got it.
Have you got it?
I've got it, yes.
It's just it's kind of like the isometric view, and like,
yeah.
It just reminded me a little bit of Solstice. And it was that was kind of brought a nice nostalgic tear to the eye.
It's like a big naked wizard on the title screen, I remember
correctly.
I haven't come across a naked wizard yet.
But no, the thing about when I played the demo Bastion is the combat system was really good fun.
Mm-hmm.
It felt a little bit like, it kind of felt like Fables in a way, in that you've got sort of each button is dedicated to sort of a different kind of range of weapon. And so you can kind of mix and match the sort of two or three things you've got quite convincingly and quite quickly.
Yeah, I mean, depending on what you're doing, where you're going, it obviously affects what loadout you've got.
Exactly.
You've also got, with each weapon, there's also a special move which you can pick up as well. And in the actual Bastion itself, as you go along collecting cores, which is kind of the... I don't know what you compare it to, but the basically, as you collect cores, it replenishes the energy in the Bastion, allows you to build different buildings, such as the distillery that allows you to use different potions to enhance your stats. So that's where the RPG elements are starting to come in, such as... plus 10 your damage for a certain weapon, or plus 10 your health. A forge, which allows you to upgrade your weapons, but that's dependent on have you found the things you need to allow you to upgrade the weapons. An armory, which allows you to buy and store your weapons. And also a shrine as well. As you go through, you will find different idols. This is really the way that the game kind of opens up the replayability, because basically each idol will make the game difficult in a different way, and you can turn these idols on and off whenever you want.
Yeah, I heard that. It was like a varying your own choice of difficulty kind of thing. It's not just like a menu thing.
Basically, make your own game, yeah.
That must work quite well. That must work really well. No, but Bastion certainly seemed worth picking up from the demo I played.
Yeah, absolutely. It's 1,200 points on Xbox Live. It's on Steam as well. It's a little bit more expensive in Steam. It's £15 on Steam instead of about $9.99.
That's worth it. I'd pay £15 for it. I saw Bastion, I wouldn't mind laying down 15 notes for it.
I would not mind at all paying £15 for it. It has caused a stink, apparently, in the Steam community, but then again...
Whatever.
they're a questionable community at times. You know, wave one thing in front of them, they're like, help us.
Oh, well. So, wholeheartedly recommended,
again,
then.
Yeah. One more thing as well. I've not seen a game... As you move along, the world's not all there. It builds up as you walk along.
Yeah, it just kind of falls in front of you, doesn't it?
It falls up from the ground, which is... At first, it's a bit odd, but you actually really get used to it. And also, this game has got one thing that I've always talked about this. It knows what a color palette is.
Huzzah!
Yes, it's not black and white. It's not...
It is art!
It is... I'm not... Yeah, okay, it's art. It's arty. It's nice. It's lovely. It
did look lovely.
It's really good to play it.
Did look
and,
lovely.
A quick hour can turn quickly into a whole afternoon wasted.
Good stuff. Well, not wasted.
I say wasted because there's many things you could be doing instead of sitting in front of your Xbox, but I don't know.
Anyway.
So yeah, goodbye.
Good. I will as soon as I've bought Street Fighter Third Strike as well.
Oh yeah, that came out.
Anyway, yes. I this month have been playing a video gaming crime. Intriguing, oh. I know. Listen to that silence that people look at me kind of going...
I said something!
Stunned.
They were stunned. Stunned into silence. No. Yep. You know how you get your brilliant games, your really good games, and then you get your utter crap games?
Uh-huh.
Now, those are okay, that's fine. They exist in this universe to be as they are and be as they wish to be. But the worst thing I think you can get is a game that it's obvious a lot of work has gone into... but just ends up being an average mess.
Rise of the Robots is an example. I think the graphics and things that went into that, and it was shite.
Well, yeah, it was appalling.
Yeah,
it was
but there's still a lot of work went into trying to produce this great game. But what's your example?
Well, as me and Al know, we did quite well at work last month, so the whole store got a £10 voucher for a shop.
So, I bought my dad's The Beatles CD for his birthday.
Exactly.
And you selfishly spent yours on yourself.
On myself, yeah. My work stuff, everyone else. So anyway, so I went to HMV around the corner in the shopping centre we're in, and I thought, I'll see what's sort of cheap on the Xbox shelves. And I used my £10 voucher towards the £12 cost of Castlevania Lords of Shadow.
Mm.
So I bought it for £2. It's on two discs. That's £1 a disc.
Which is something he's been saying to me consistently for the past fortnight.
Well, that's the only thing that's actually getting me by at the moment on it. I sit there and I think, right, there is not a moment in Lords of Shadow where you cannot link it to another game that does the same thing better.
That's
right?
Bad.
Yeah, exactly. In the opening moments, you're in a village fighting a load of werewolves as Gabriel Belmont, right? And he has what looks like a kind of crucifix thing, but on the end of a chain. So he's swinging around this crucifix, and you're thinking, okay, God of War.
Yep.
And it's just exactly the same mechanic, swinging these chains around all over the place, and then, you know, battering werewolves until they explode into clouds of blood. And then there's a little bit, within the first hour, you'll be crossing a frozen river, which cracks below your feet, and then this massive monster comes out. And you have to basically wait for him to try and punch you into the river, and then his fist gets stuck, and you climb up his fist, and you have to search for glowing blue emblems on his body in order to stab it and kill it. And you think, okay, Shadow of the Colossus.
Yeah, I'm with you now.
And then it starts getting to stages where you're walking through a forest, there's lots of spider webs about the bit, but then these spider webs get bigger and bigger and bigger. And then you're kind of thinking, what's going to be around this next corner? And you're like, a big spider. And then even then I was like kind of going, Lord of the Rings? And I was a bit, it's starting to do movies now. So I was a bit like, there's just so much. There's like this effort gone into it, but it's gone onto being so average and dull and safe and non-groundbreaking at all. And I'm not saying every single game I play has to be groundbreaking. But it doesn't half knock the enjoyment of it. Because I'm looking at it now and thinking, I'm only like 3 hours into disc one. There's two discs of this.
Oh.
And I'm really thinking, this is going to be an absolute bloody chore. And what doesn't help is the fact that the voice, the narration, once again it's got a narrator, but it's done by Patrick Stewart of Star Trek fame. And he takes it so bloody, the storyline is utter fantasy pap, but he takes it so seriously. So halfway, you know, in between each level on the loading screens, you'll have Patrick Stewart going,
He reaches forward into the heart of his courage, going forward, forward ever onward, to the land of the old gods. Here he must ask the sagely etc., 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 etc. And it's just like, okay, Patrick, you're fairly fucking going for this one, like, aren't you? And it just ends up being the most poor-faced piece of shit. It's just, oh my god.
Commander Worf's head looks like a funny. That famous Family Guy line, if you remember it.
What's that?
The Family Guy line. No one saw it?
No, I've not seen it.
The Star Trek take, and he just goes out. Yeah, he goes, number one, would you laugh if I called Commander Worf's head a fanny? yes, and he goes, Commander Worf's head looks like a fanny. And he's going, suck my ridges. And he's like, get a sense of humor, Rocky Dennis.
Right.
There you go, that's my Family Guy reference.
Well, that's more humour than he manages to muster in the entire of Lords of Shadow.
Ah, right.
Gabriel Belmont's voice is actually Robert Carlyle as well, i.e. Begbie. And I'm desperate for him to go, nay cunt leaves this tavern until we find out who glassed this orc. I'm desperate for it. I know it's not going to happen, but that would make my fucking day. Then it would be worth the pound a disc. But at the moment, I sit there and kind of think, I'll stick it on just to see if it's got any better. And then I'll play it for about an hour and think, nah, still doing the same old shit. So yep. I bought it as kind of something to play to keep me occupied until Deus Ex comes out tomorrow. But sadly, Deus Ex is out tomorrow, so I'm going to probably get Deus Ex and this will be shoved to the back. Bye-bye. So long. See ya. To the old gods with you. And then that's it, really.
You could lend it to me. So I can see how shit it is.
Do you want to loan it?
All right, go on.
Oh, I'll give you it. That's no problem at all.
He'll actually give you it. You'll just go and go take it away.
I'll give you it. No, do you remember when we played the demo and we had like the little My Little Pony bit at the start?
Oh, God.
Try not to let that warp your mind too much.
My Little Pony / Robot Unicorn attack.
Yeah, it was a bit weird, wasn't it? Yeah, exactly. There you go. You can just reference it. Yeah, Robot Unicorn. You're on a horse, brightly coloured, try to leap through over fences and the Robot Unicorn attack.
Be with you. Is that this? Yeah, anyway.
That was the one. Yes. Al there, inputting erasure where none is necessary. And I think that wraps up the What You've Been Playing section. One of the newer ideas we were going to introduce in this episode of Break for Frogger on Alan's suggestion was a section called Challenge Alan. It was going to take the theme tune of Challenge Annika, for those old enough to remember it, and it was basically going to be anyone could send in a retro challenge for Al to try and complete, to see if he was any good or not. Then the idea kind of morphed, thanks to Dave Whitelaw of Sonic's Ring fame, who told us, no, wouldn't it be great if Alan was to do all the challenges from Games Master's Golden Joystick Challenge in order and see how we got on with those in the modern age? And we went, yeah, that'd be pretty awesome. So we got in touch with Patrick Moore, and here he is.
Welcome, Geordie Al. This is the first in a series of challenges that originally bewitched youngsters almost 20 years ago when you were barely in your 30s. In this challenge, you will play as Sonic the Hedgehog, navigating the second level of a tropical landscape known as the Green Hill Zone. While avoiding all manner of hostile creatures and booby traps, you must collect 150 rings in just 2 minutes. A single collision with any of the aforementioned dangers will mean losing all your rings and the challenge being over. Happy hunting!
Right, and after that fantastic introduction, we have Alan, who's now going to attempt that immortal challenge. Now, we'd like to point out that Al has actually done this with 157 rings about 20 minutes ago during his wee practice runs. And then he kind of danced around the room and said, yeah, there, I've done it. And then we actually told him we needed to record the evidence. So, onwards we go. Alan, take it away. Let's go. Here we are, Green Hill Zone 2, 150 rings. It's probably going to do his fucking head in. Here he goes. Now, Al's going to collect all these nice rings. He's up on the springboard, and he's collecting them. He's missed one of them already, but that's okay. Leaping over the bridge now with the piranhas. He doesn't have to get them all, apparently. And here he is.
Three short last time.
And he's waiting for the little kind of
trolley thing on a chain. That's it. Swings around. That's fantastic. Drops down now into the valley section. Now, this was causing a lot of pain and frustration before. This is the bit where he has to break through a wall with speed boots. There we go. And he's done about halfway through the speed wall. Halfway through. There we go. And that's fantastic. He's in. He's in. Two attempts to break the wall. He has the shield. 54 rings now. 54 rings and 45 seconds gone. 54 rings. When he's sailing through the air. He's hit the roof of the loop-the-loop, which is just what he wanted to do, because that was the major source of rings in this early part of the level. 1 minute gone, 88 rings, and here we go. That is fantastic. He's got the invincibility, now he's going to go navigate the rising platforms here. Still going. Halfway point in the level there, halfway point in the level. Hit the halfway point, 106 rings. 106 rings in the halfway point of this level. Alright. We've got a telly screen that gives him 10. 121. Springboard hidden in the tree. He's going back to it to get another 3 rings out of it. 131. A minute and a half gone. He's nearly there. 144. And he's landed on the spike pit and done himself in. He's done himself in. Are we going for a second attempt, Al?
Fucking did it there as well. Really annoyed me that. Did so well there.
He's going for a second attempt at it, ladies and gentlemen. A second attempt. Back to the start of the level. Attempting again. Run number 2. Here he goes. Over the bridge. Up the springboard. Navigating the crabs. Story of his life. Yep, on the swings. And now through the waterfall, another 5 or 6 rings in there, and there we go. Getting the red speed boots, gonna smash through the wall now. Half a minute gone. 33 rings. Oh, and he's taking 3 attempts. Last bit of the wall, there we go. And 53 rings and a shield, and he's away. And he's crashed into the small bug like thing. There we go. On to the roof of the loop. This is where he wants to be. Good supply of rings here in the early stage of the level, as we were saying before. Now then. He's hoping he's missed a few there. Hoping he's got enough. 90 rings. 1 minute 8 seconds for navigating the rising platforms. Still going. Going strong. Halfway point in the level. 1 minute. 20 seconds gone, 104 rings. A sigh from Al, a resigned, world-weary sigh. Up on the springboard, in the tree, 129 rings, 20 seconds to go.
I think we go, Consoros.
Counts out as 10 seconds left to go. Al is running into it.
He's done it.
1 minute 55. 151 rings. Alan Milburn snatching victory from the claws of defeat there. I thought that was a goner.
Second attempt.
Excellently done.
I thought I missed too many on that bit. Wasn't as good as my first run, but
still, he's done it, that's it.
I think I'll spend another hour to get over.
And for that, you get Dave Whitelaw's golden penis. Sorry, joystick. Sorry. When it was decided that I was going to do an audio review of From Dust, I was a bit worried. Not because I was struggling with the words to describe the game, but simply because I can't pronounce the name of the fella who made it. You know the guy, the French one. Eric Shitlou? Shitolu?
shit peas. Anyway, the guy who made Another World in Flashback has come back after a 13-year absence to lend his talents to Xbox Live Summer of Arcade, and it's rapidly becoming all very obvious that he's been wandering around a volcano for most of that time, maybe in Iceland, heedle age of plane. From Dust tells the story of a tribe who are on the verge of extinction and relying on you to bring them back from the brink. Essentially, this involves them following a path their elders took and gaining knowledge from various totems left behind by them. You'd almost think that From Dust would take the usual path as far as God games go and have you controlling the tribe themselves as they wander the environments, but this isn't the case. As The Breath, you'll control the environment itself, carving out mountains and draining water so that the tribe have a clear path to each objective. Even with that in mind, it's still a little bit of a mistake to label From Dust as a God game, because you don't exactly have everything your own way all the time. The game is the closest experience we have to a real-time strategy sim with Mother Nature as your opponent. From Dust presents a dangerous journey with all kinds of ways for your tribespeople to meet their deaths, drowned by tsunami, boiled by lava, or burnt to a crisp by flames, or just a few. There's an ever-present danger in each level of From Dust, which while it does look like a stunning game, you usually have to be careful what you take away from one side of the map and add to the other. Sure, taking Earth from that riverbank might seem like a really great idea now, but you'll widen the river and flood a whole plain, causing more tribespeople death. Xbox Live Arcade seems to have a perfect setting for releasing games that take a few more risks than your usual retail release, and From Dust certainly occupies that risky territory. There's simply too much strange about this to imagine a full-time release, and it often seems more like an expanded tech demo than a fully-fledged game. For all the beauty that it has, there are some quite strange quirks. The main one would be the fact that From Dust relies heavily on the game's ability to guide the tribespeople over your newly crafted terrain in order to get to the exit of each level. Sadly, it's often the case that you'll have a few of them wandering over to a totem to gain important knowledge, which will be vital to the survival, only to get stuck in front of a small stream, which may have at one stage been a raging torrent, but you've moved about 10 tons of earth in order to reduce it down. They'll still struggle, though, and they're often clueless about climbing mountains as well, meaning they'll wander around the base, yelping at you before the lava comes to burn their skin off. It might not happen all the time, but when you're trying to protect your villagers from an oncoming flood, it won't have bring out your godly fury. It's moments like this, though, that when the lack of direct control over your subjects kinda hits home, and it's the one thing the game really had to get right, and it doesn't quite manage it 100% of the time. The game also sometimes seems to revel in giving you some kind of ridiculously short time frame to complete an objective. This often requires your tribespeople to move quickly in order to gain ground, and despite making a very clear path for them, they seem to have an urgent desire to take the scenic route before writing a postcard back home to their village, which is now probably under 20 feet of water as a result of their inaction. From Dust is a curious idea executed well, but maybe not quite well enough. Its unique angle and good looks will grant it high esteem amongst the games are art crowd, but for everyone else it'll be tainted by the fact that one cog in the machine that needed to be perfect has a couple of cracks in. There's something very oddly therapeutic about moving elements around the map to carve out the area to your own design, and the way nature adapts around your decisions is very impressive, but From Dust lacks slightly in the gameplay department, and that's something no god can fix easily. After that relatively brief, actually, in comparison to some of the others we've had in the past, what you pull in section, we're going to go on to what was going to be the random topic generator, but I've kind of taken out the random of it, and I've done the dictator topic generator, because what I say, that's what we're going to talk about.
It's the random topic generator, Colonel Gaddafi edition.
Yeah, it's the random topic generator, Colonel Gaddafi, North Korea edition. In which it just says something that's honest at random, it was totally at random.
Somebody pinched his hat.
What?
Somebody's pinched his hat that was in the front of the paper.
Whose?
Colonel Gaddafi's.
What? Well, no, I thought they were going to find him and shoot him. I thought they were going to find
him. They found his hat.
They found his hat.
Apparently, his hat, wow.
Then I put it to... Patrick says, they found his mystical hat. The man himself cannot be far away.
Apparently some guy was wearing, you know, like some people who overthrew him and he just randomly found his hat on the floor and wore it.
What? You wouldn't wear it in case some American came in the corner going, there's fucking Gaddafi. Bang! And then blew you away.
Well, I don't know, but that... Apparently,
do you remember when Gaddafi met Tony Blair? Apparently, the rumour goes that Colonel Gaddafi knew he was going to meet Tony Blair and set up for the meeting. Apparently he spent all the night before eating goat curry so that he knew his farts would be noxious in the tent.
That doesn't surprise me.
So he could pump away while he was talking to Tony and it would just be absolutely stinking.
I don't want to hear about Colonel Gaddafi pumping away at Tony Blair, thank you.
Well, at least...
Yeah. Can we get back on topic here?
If he had noxious farts, he would have far more chemical weaponry than Saddam Hussein did. Anyway, right, moving on. Anyway, we're going to talk about choice in video games. This is kind of in honour of the fact that, as we've mentioned up front there at the tail end of what you've been playing section, that Deus Ex is out tomorrow, game which encourages free choice and has consequence of your actions. So we're basically going to think of fantastic examples of such a thing. I mean, I would go with the original Deus Ex. Being a fantastic example, although it was a kind of on the basis of it a linear story, it still felt like what you had and the choices you made would go some way to affecting how that story panned out. And you did have sort of three different. I won't ruin it for anyone, like, you know, because I think you still want to play the original, don't you, Ewan?
Yes, I do. I will get around to it at some point.
Yeah, I won't ruin it, especially because Deus Ex that's coming out tomorrow is a prequel.
Right. So
there's three main sort of threads running through the actual original game, and it's three main people in charge of those threads, and it's whoever you go with the most indirectly will influence how the whole story kind of ends that way.
So most friendly towards, basically.
Exactly.
Okay.
I mean, that was in the year 2000. You know what I mean? There was for a game to do that long ago was quite phenomenal. I don't think anyone's really quite topped, for me anyway, as gameplay experience goes, as far as choices. I don't think anything's quite topped the original Deus Ex, which is why I'm so interested to play the third one tomorrow.
Yeah.
So that would probably be my vote for sort of a choice in video game, and you know, giving you that impression anyway. Anything else that anyone wants to throw on that fire?
I'll throw the Infamous franchise on it. Not so much mission to mission, but there are some missions where, depending on who you go with, will adversely affect the outcome of the game overall. Especially Infamous 2 was by the end, you made one pretty, I won't ruin the story, but one pretty altered choice that, when by the end time it was over, I'm kind of like, oh, that was a bit more major than I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
But throughout the game, you are making small choices of what you want to do. For example, you see somebody being mugged by some of the rebels, and you're kind of like, well, I could go down and save her and be good, but I can't be bothered moving from up here because I'm trying to do this at the same time. So you've got that dilemma of, it's the classic dilemma of, I can't be bothered going to the toilet, but I really need to go. Putting it really simply.
So, at any point in Infamous... You can't be bothered to go to the toilet, but he really needs to go. Does he able to put on his superpowered nappy or something?
Yeah. That's a horrible example of using
It's a really weird example. Just throw in there. It's really bizarre. Does Infamous' choices boil down to directly good and evil, though? Is there kind of some grey area in Infamous?
There are some grey areas at times.
Is there? Right, that's okay, because my big worry about it... I mean, I've never played it. I don't have a PS3 to play it on.
Yeah.
So Infamous looks interesting, but I've never had the chance to sit down with it for any extended length of time. Yeah. It seemed to me, from looking at it from the outside, it's very much kind of, you know, be a complete wanker and not save this girl and beat her up and basically, you know, tell her fuck off and get her mugged. Or run in like Knight in Shining Armour, beat up all the other guys and go, well, here you go, darling, on your cell, I've saved you. It just seems to be very kind of black and white.
At times, yes, but at other times, say you're doing a mission that's for good. You could be a dick about the way you do it, but as long as you're more good than a dick, it's going to work okay in the end.
Right, okay. So
if you go around being an absolute dickhead all the time, yes, you're going to end up being the biggest dickhead known to mankind, But if you're a dickhead who at times shows a little of his good side, then you're not going to be quite as dickhead and hated by the people in the city.
Okay, I get you. I get what you mean. I get what you mean. Tom,
that's my enemy.
You were probably going to go...
Yeah, I think Mass Effect 2. Well, Mass Effect, the franchise so far.
Yeah,
stands
as a whole.
As probably the pinnacle for me.
Right.
Because, again, it is fairly linear in terms of the fact that the eventual outcome is always going to be the same. You will face the same boss and get the same ending. Mm-hmm. It's just the illusion of free choice created by the ability to structure how you approach the missions, which order you do the missions in, how your team's built, the conversations that you're involved in, the Paragon and Renegade choices. You know, it's just...
Yeah.
It's so involved, and that really does... It stands as the pinnacle of that for me. But I can think on the flip side of it, just to go down the kind of opposite route, you've got the Fable franchise, which has... Peter Molyneux's been trying to sell, as we know, with this very... Look at this, this is free choice in a video game.
Look at this shiny, shiny thing.
And that is... That is linearity without the illusion of non-linearity. I just... He oversells it every time, and then you play it and you go...
Yeah.
There's about half as much choice as you tried to imply was in here, Mr. Molyneux.
Yeah.
You are talking shit, sir.
Are we allowed to spoil Fable 2? Quite old.
When did Fable 2 come out?
2008.
So it's been out for 3 years.
Yeah.
By my rules, yes.
Okay. By Al's rules, yes.
By your rules, if it came out last week, you can spoil it.
I think Professor Layton was at least 2 years old.
Oh, we're back to this. Okay. Anyway, yeah.
Let's
spoiler
spoil it,
for Fable 2
that,
if you're that bothered about it for the next couple minutes. I didn't like about Fable 2 is that no matter what you did during the game, your essential ending choice came down to that last bit in the spire.
Really?
Yeah, you could do whatever the fuck you wanted until you're basically given the choice in the spire to either your family have been killed, you can either, what is it, get a load, you can either save the entire of Albion apart from your family and your dog and become a hero, or you can
sacrifice the entire population, or the majority of Albion's population.
To get your family back,
mm-hmm,
and your dog, or take a load of money to yourself and get neither.
No.
So that's essentially, you can do whatever the fuck you want up until that moment, and it'll always just boil down to that last choice.
We're going to get back to that thing that I had an issue with here as well. What was it? Not Whole Island? Was that what it was called? The DLC?
The first
pack
DLC? Yes, it was.
Yeah. Wherein, because I, in Fable 2, made the choice of losing my family and my dog for the greater good of Albion.
Yeah.
And then you get to Not Whole Island, you find a fucking crypt, and your dog's given back to you.
If you
sacrifice one person or to this crypt, and you're just getting to the point where you go, so not only do you give this choice thing, you then kind of renege on it anyway. And
yeah, it's a bit like a...
Because they realise that the dog is a very, very important element
for being this
game.
Massive mechanic.
You cannot do...
Said, oh yeah, it finds treasure, it does this out the next thing.
There was no way that you could play 3 DLC packs with any sort of...
You can get the full potential out of it without the dog.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's the whole thing there. So.
And they'd harped on about it being such a big mechanic of the game for so long. That it just
So then you feel like you're not a complete kind of character without it. Therefore, you then feel pressurized into
doing
getting
it, anyway,
it back.
And get it back anyway. Yeah.
So, yeah. How's that for free fucking choice, Mr. Molyneux?
Oh, harsh.
Just to go back to Mass Effect 2 briefly, I've actually recently gone back to it as I've obviously not finished it. And this was just a random thing that came across in Subject Choice. Last night I did the mission where you go explore the remains of the Normandy. And
right.
I found the remains of the Mako. At no point did they give me the choice to blow the fucking thing up.
Oh, I would have loved to do that.
I would have blown the thing up so much.
I would have ground it into dust.
If
fucking
it cost me like 1,000 credits, I'd have done it.
Yeah.
See, I was talking about this with my housemate today.
Oh,
aye. And I just don't get the Mako issue.
It's just
the
uncontrolled.
It wasn't
the
Mako that pissed me off in that game. The Mako was tolerable. It was the fucking micro-organization of the infantry.
Well, that's annoying as well.
That was
beyond
well.
Annoying.
The fact that you can traverse entire planets and if one tire of the Mako lands in some lava or something, that's it.
Learn to be a more precise driver, Phillips.
Well, I've given it away. I don't care anymore.
To me?
Me and Mass Effect. Yeah. Me and Mass Effect have missed the boat with each other. Sorry, that's it.
Well, you're missing out on a very good gaming experience.
I'm trying. I know.
Choice in games, Al? Choice in games?
Well, it's may not surprise you. I'm going to do some retro ones.
Oh, go ahead. That's fine. That's fine. Yeah. It's all right.
Yeah, well, here we go. There's a couple I've just been thinking about. Mega Man would technically be a Mega Man 2 because you can choose what order you fight all the bosses in.
Yep.
Okay.
Or what order you do the levels in.
Right. Yep. Doesn't affect a story as such.
Well, no, it affects what weapons you've got onto which level.
True, I suppose. Yeah.
All right. The other one. I've been thinking about this. Good. There is, which we've touched on before, Silent Hill. You've got 4 different endings.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, so it affects, depending on whether you save the girl or there's a policewoman you've got to get an antidote for, you can just shoot her and that changes the endings.
Aye.
And there's a little side mission you've got to do, and if you don't do that, that changes the ending of it. There's 4 different endings.
I suppose on the subject of Silent Hill, your player choice is amplified in the Wii version. I can't remember the name of it now.
Shattered Memories,
that was the one. Because that takes like a whole psychological test aspect to it, and whatever you answer in the test ends up being transposed into the actual story.
Is that the one where you use the Wiimote as a phone?
That was an awesome concept. I loved that.
That's right. The one. It's a bit freaky. Anyway, carry on.
I can imagine.
There was Metal Gear Solid, I believe, as well. There was a choice of endings there.
I didn't get far enough into Metal Gear Solid.
First one for the, well, not the first one, but one for the PS, first one that came out on the PS1. 2 different endings you could have because you got put in this torture rack.
Oh yeah, it's if and you failed the torture.
Yeah, then you got a different ending to whether you've done it or not.
Oh.
And I've done both of them. I can't remember either of them, but I did do them both.
Oh, God, it's not just me there because I'm sitting there thinking, I played this, but I cannot remember.
I remember there being 2 different endings to Metal Gear Solid on the PS1 as to whether you failed or passed that torture test, which was apparently fucking hard.
Yeah, it was.
I never really got that far. I think I got to... No, I did. I must have because I got to Metal Gear Rex and couldn't be bothered anymore.
I got distracted midway through Metal Gear Solid by WWF No Mercy on the N64.
Oh, good choice.
All right.
So the story was a bit disjointed for me.
Oh, well, once Tom's mentioned that, that's another good game because it's got branching storylines on No Mercy.
So it has.
So
it has,
yes. So
yes,
it has. You've
got to go. Still to this day, got one of the better storylines.
Oh, well, I love it.
Choices on a wrestling game.
I think as wrestling games go, it stands as kind of the height of how that genre's been. And we're only getting back to it now, really. As time moves on, you know, the grappling systems, the customization, we are really only getting to that level again now.
Personal opinion. Does anyone else find it a great problem being a bastard in video games, though? You know what I mean? If you're given the choice to be an absolute bastard and then you're given the choice to be an angel, does anyone else find it a real sort of problem in being a git?
Well,
In most things, apart from Mass Effect, because it's so subtly introduced. You'll be in the middle of a conversation on Mass Effect 2 and you'll just get a little renegade symbol flash up in the corner and it just gives you the option to kind of hit the right trigger to engage this and you'll just end up like butting someone with your gun or something to shut them up. And you just find yourself doing it because you're just presented with it and you just go, hey, all right then, bang.
It's a kind of classic, I wonder what this button does.
Aye.
Well, I might have said this for Retro Emporium one day. None of you might remember it. But a long time ago, when I was a wee little boy, does anyone remember Crash Magazine?
Yes.
Right. And you used to get demos.
Yes.
Demo tapes.
Uh-huh.
There was a famous one that I had to buy just for the name of the game. How to Be a Complete Bastard.
I remember this, yes.
And the whole point of that game was just to be a complete bastard.
Really?
And the more things you did, you got bastard points. Right, and you had to fill up your bastard meter, right? But and it was like stuff like putting itching powder on people and putting cling film over the toilet and just generally breaking things. It was like, you found a computer. Do you want to put it down, break it, or reset it? If you click on reset, your Spectrum just reset itself.
Nice. Nice.
So yes, I remember How to Be a Complete Bastard. That's.
Yes.
It must be an emulator with it out there somewhere. It's a great game.
Oh, I'm going to find it.
Quite phenomenal, actually. That'd be quite phenomenal. Anyway, I think that just about wraps up the fantastic topic. That was all right, actually.
We got some mileage.
Also, there's one more. I forgot very briefly. It's quite funny. Just one that sprung to mind. If everyone remembers playing Street Fighter 2 Turbo,
yes.
Only character, but when you completed it with Chun-Li,
uh-huh.
You got choice of 2 endings.
Did you?
Yeah. Yep, options. I can't remember what it was now, but you got choices like Forgiven Them Bison or or something like that, and you got a different ending depending on which option you chose.
Oh.
I had no idea. I didn't remember that.
I can't remember the exacts of it, but yes,
you do.
I
wasn't usually a Chun Li kind of player.
Yep,
so yeah,
you definitely got the two endings for it, which so I might have a look on YouTube or something, but you definitely get the two different endings for it.
Awesome. I thought it was going to be, which colour of knickers does Chun Li wear? Is it red or is it blue? You'll probably see them, so the choice does matter.
What dungeon more, red or blue, red or blue, red or blue?
Right, anyway, that concludes the topic, dictatorship.
I rather like that bird. That does the introduction for Sonic's ring. She sounds well tasty. I'd like to get right up her chuff. Greetings, listeners of Break for Frogger. I am Secret Salmon, gaming's premier undercover reporter. You would love me. I'm handsome. Sony have enforced a redesign on the PlayStation Vita to reduce costs. They have removed the screen. Activision have announced a new installment to their Modern Warfare series, to be set amidst the slums of Amsterdam, titled Call of Booty Modern Warfare. Lionhead's Peter Molyneux has said something which might not come to fruition. After considerable public pressure, Microsoft have announced avatar designs for nudists. Removing clothes will set you back 120 Microsoft points. That is all for this month. Fear not, I shall return. Ooh, nudie Sonic's ring lady. Yummy.
Hello, welcome to the Aperture Science Computer Aided Enrichment Center.
Good evening, dudes, dudettes, and dosses, and welcome to episode 3 of the Co-op Shop. My name is Kuz, and this is my second player, Starttree.
Hey, guys.
And this month, we've been testing, teleporting, and twisting the laws of physics with Val's follow-on to the cake-promising Portal, namely Portal 2. So, over to you, Gladys.
Right then, listeners, the co-op story of Portal 2 continues on from the end of the single-player campaign. The two playable characters are a pair of bipedal robots called Atlas and Peabody, each with fully functional portal guns. Now, the basics of the co-op is about GLaDOS setting numerous tests for these adventurous droids, with unexpected results at the end of each task. Now, I'm not going to mention too much detail about this in fear of spoilers, but let's just say that these mischievous mechanicals are integral to the larger picture.
Time out for a second. That wasn't supposed to happen.
So the name of the game in the cooperative side of Portal 2 really is teamwork. You really can't address these rooms on a sort of lone wolf basis. If you're not helping your partner and your partner isn't helping you, yeah, then you're screwed. There's no way you're going to be able to get through
it. Pretty much, yeah. No, well, in all honesty, the whole co-op side of this was specifically designed for two people.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah.
There's no way on earth you could complete it by yourself.
No, absolutely none. In some of it, I love the way that, say, you know, one of you is stood on a button to open a door for the second person to get into the next room, and then the second player shoots a portal to the wall behind you so that once you've moved off the button and the door closes, you can just walk out into the room that they're already stood in, which is great. Some of the time it did lead to maybe minor communication issues, if maybe as you were about to run through a door I moved off the button, and or as you're walking along one of those light paths or something, I shoot the wrong portal out and you fall into the water and die.
Yeah,
or something like that.
Good times.
I did notice I killed you a lot more than you killed me. Sorry, dude.
Well, I got a mind for physics and I
So, yeah, the whole level design, as Tree said, really is geared towards two people. There are a few things in this that it does take from the single-player aspect of Portal 2. There's a blue gel, which is
the bouncy gel.
The orange gel, which
orange
is
gel
speed.
Is the speed gel.
And then there's a white one, which is apparently ground-up moon rocks, which allows you to put portals wherever the gel falls.
Yeah. I do like the fact with that, though. The whole physics behind it.
Yeah, I think I remember one puzzle where you get that sort of continuous loop where you put a portal on the floor and then portal directly above it, so you get that sort of terminal velocity thing.
Yes.
And then the second player would shift the portal to fire you up into the air or something like that. And I remember that took us a couple of goes because
I was in charge
of the portals again.
Well, a lot of the puzzles took us easily 20 minutes to half hour each.
Yeah.
Just because you had to spend time thinking about it to figure out what the objective was we had to get to.
Yeah. But in some respects, I'm not sure how they've done this, but I really like the way that some of the time there were some rooms that we were addressing, and the majority of them, you instantly knew what you were doing. Some of the time, I was trying to catch up with you, or you just have to physically say to me, look, go and put your portal there. Mm. And once you'd given me an indication, I knew where it was that we were going. But then there were some that we would walk into, and it was then me that was taking charge, and you that was sort of following behind me. And it was like the whole sort of two heads are better than one thing. It really did take or put that into practice. It's very clever how they did the level design on this, how they sort of forced that out of you. But
either that, or we're both a little bit slow in the head.
There could be that.
not all our neurons are firing.
Yeah. One of the other great things about Portal 2, the cooperative side, as I said, that we're sticking with, the two robots that you're playing as, Atlas and Peabody, well, just a bit of an overview. Atlas is orange?
Blue,
sorry. Peabody is...
either orange or red.
It'll say orange.
Orange.
Peabody is...
tall and gangly.
Yeah, whereas Atlas is
short and fat.
Sort of, yeah, sort of short and stumpy. But... between these two mechanical robots, there's just so much emotion in them, even though they don't speak. The way that, you know, just the little human gestures, the little waves and the little high fives and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
the hugs.
Yeah,
the
laughing at one another and...
the various little games you can do. Yeah.
It was great.
Brotherly banter.
Yeah, some of it is really, really funny. But what makes this 100 times better is the little snide digs that Gladys gives you as you're going through.
Kind of like the angry parent school teacher type thing.
Yeah, kind of.
You get mischievous, she tells you off.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Just for to give a bit of an example, though there isn't really a competitive aspect of this, it does seem like in the background Gladys is making note of whichever one of you is dying more or whichever one of you is falling more and things like that, and she will mock you for it.
Yeah.
And it does start, it seems like she's trying to sort of separate the two of you. She's trying to put a little bit of disdain in the ranks, really. It's what seems to piss her off more than anything else is these little human
interactions.
Is the high fives and the hugs and things like that. Because you're supposed to, you know, you're just your robot. She's supposed to be getting on with it.
Just testing.
Yeah, but if you start showing these human traits, she does get really, really cross.
Yeah.
Which does lead to some very, very amusing little one-liners and...
oh, I'm gonna kill you.
Yeah, sorry, Gladys. We'll get back to what we were talking about.
Yeah,
controls.
So controls are great.
I found them very simple.
Yeah,
one shoulder button is one portal, another shoulder button, another portal.
Yeah.
And you've got your analog stick for
looking right about. Movement.
Yeah.
It's
very simple, straightforward.
And D-pad for your movements.
That was for the movements.
The gestures, sorry.
Yeah, interactions.
Yeah. And then just, I think, was it X for jump or something like that?
Yeah, I believe it was, yeah.
So, yeah, they are very minimal, but you don't need excessively detailed controls for what it is that you're doing. I did quite like the fact that the portals were colour-coded, though. I did like
that did make it easier if you remembered them.
Yeah.
Because
I forgot them even in the single player.
Yeah, but let's face it, both of us cocked up.
Yeah, But that was all part of the fun.
Exactly.
It's all for science.
All for science.
So, yeah, the graphics. I know you didn't play a lot of the first Portal, did you?
No, I didn't, no.
Between the two of them, there isn't that much of a difference. I would have thought there would have been a massive leap in the graphical quality between the two of them, and especially this being a standalone game, whereas the first one was just, well, it was included in the orange box, wasn't it? Now, don't get me wrong, like, the things that the Valve have done in the past, like... Half-Life was fantastic. Team Fortress, completely different graphical style, but still very, very good. This, a little bit disappointing, but in some respects that didn't matter. It was the content more than its looks.
Yeah, content more than quality.
Yeah, you didn't really notice, did you? It was...
In all honesty, with the style of the game that it was, to me personally, I don't think it needed high-end graphics.
No.
You know, you walk into a test chamber, you got white walls, you got a green door.
Yeah.
Very simple, straightforward.
Yeah. And some of the bits that were a little bit more special, did seem to have a little bit more care and attention put to them. Like the light bridges, they were quite
Bridges were good. Yeah. I suppose the movement of the gels themselves when they're being dropped, shot, whatever.
So, yeah. You can tell it's fluid.
You can tell it's fluid. It had the proper motions of the ocean, shall we say.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. So, yeah, though it wasn't a breakthrough in graphical quality, it was still very, very good. Now, one thing that I really do have to mention, now this is more going on to the single player aspect more so mm-hmm. than the co-op. The quality of the voice acting on Portal 2 is the best I think I've ever seen in any game. I think it's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I can appreciate that.
Unfortunately, in the cooperative side, you don't really tend to get as much of a showcase of this as you do in the main storyline.
I suppose you don't, because in co-op all you get is GLaDOS and the turrets.
That's right. Yeah.
They'll speak a little bit when they're trying to kill you.
Yeah, yeah. But in the actual single-player campaign of it, Stephen Merchant, for one, absolutely fantastic.
Yeah,
as Wheatley, I think he's absolutely brilliant.
Pulled it off perfectly.
Yeah, and I seriously would kill for this man's job. Nolan North is in this again. He plays as the sort of void add-ons, really.
What are they called? The personality cores.
That's right, yeah. He plays the sort of corrupt ones of those, and absolutely brilliant. Mm. There's one bit in particular at the end I'm not going to spoil for you that I was laughing my head off when anyway.
We digress.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic voice acting, second to none. Honestly, really, really, really good. From your side of things, mate, was there any particular standout moment at Portal 2?
In all honesty, mate, I cannot think of one.
Mm.
You know, the entire game as it was, I thoroughly enjoyed all of it.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. The entire thing was fantastic, but I think there was one test chamber in particular that really showcased co-op in its entirety, which was that bit where there was a couple of buttons that were on top of that ledge, and then I had to get down into that room and move between, like, moving boxes and moving spinning blades.
Literally you had to rely on each other to get to get through it, get to your to your goal.
And it started off with me working the buttons and you went into the room. And
yeah, that didn't work out well.
No, I killed you 4 times.
Yeah, your hand-eye coordination needs work.
It's not great. No, it's but then when I was in, just knowing that everything was in your hand, there was only very minimal actions needed from me to be able to get through that particular task. You were sort of deciding when it was I moved forward, and you were
just trying to, was in my hands.
Yeah, exactly. I thought that was absolutely brilliant. So yeah, all of Portal 2, especially the cooperative side of things. Most games, when you add a second player, doubles the fun factor, and that really cannot be said enough for Portal 2. It's absolutely brilliant.
Too true.
Yeah, I cannot recommend this enough. If you haven't gone and bought it already, then I recommend you do so straight away. And go and find a friend to play with as well. It's honestly absolutely brilliant.
Agreed.
Okay, so that's it for us for this month. So next month, we'll be entering the criminal underbelly of the Kane and Lynch series. That's right, you heard us. 2 games, 1 episode. So until then, it's goodbye from him.
See you guys.
It's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from Gladys.
Goodbye.
Back to you, Break for Frogger.
Well, here's a little segment for you. We thought this guy was dead. Last time we saw him, he was caught in some sort of Gerber-related fire. Now, however, he is indeed alive and well. He's just been hiding for the last year, almost. Just waiting to come out. Just been biding his time for the moment right. And here is the lovely Reverend Ewan Taylor for another sermon.
Good evening, children. My name is Reverend Ewan Taylor. I am broadcasting live from a secret location. As you may be aware, I've had some issues in the past, but I'm putting that behind me now. And I'm over the next few episodes of the podcast on this Break for Frogger, I'm going to do a short piece regarding the gaming news of the current times. And today I'd like to talk about the fact that Street Fighter today, which is a today's date is the 24th of August, has gone on a third strike, which is now available online. I don't understand how you could have a strike online. The internet's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I mean, I'm on the internet right now, and that's kind of what got me in trouble in the first place, I suppose. But my question is, where is Strike 1 and Strike 2? You can't just go all the way to Street Fighter Third Strike without without having Street Fighter 3 first strike and second strike, I mean, that's just preposterous. You have to have the other two strikes. So I'm starting a campaign to find the two strikes. And anyone who wants to join me in my epic quest is welcome to contact me. The contact details are recorded in code somewhere in this podcast audio, because I can't obviously reveal where I am because, well, let's just say people are still looking after me. And yes, it appears that my film for the evening is loaded. So I am now just going to relax and enjoy myself the way us reverends and enjoy to do.
And now, the Catholic School Field Trip 2011!
Goodbye, everybody.
Last month, in episode 2.7, Alan and I introduced the Retro Games Emporium, lamenting the fact that he didn't have a theme tune, and then we thought, wouldn't it be great if we just nicked the Open All Hours theme song? Then Evil Ninja Phil sent us this. Wasn't that incredible?
Oh, very appreciative, very appreciative.
Yeah, exactly. It's awesome, isn't it? We're going to use that from now on. Cheers,
absolutely.
Phil. Thank you, Phil. Anyway, Al, in we go to the Retro Games Emporium for another month. What are the wares on offer tonight, sir?
Well, I was going to do some edit last month, so I like doing games that come in groups, genres, almost sort of. Like, there's many games. And I decided to do The Simpsons, which, of course, has been on been on our telly since 1989, is The Simpsons.
1989, you said?
Yeah,
1989. Yeah, I thought you said 1999.
And it just seems to be getting really rubbish these days, but that's...
by the by, yeah.
As far as video games concerned, I think we had around 1991, the first one, Bart versus the Space Mutants.
I had this game.
On the Amiga and NES it was on, and it was a terrible premise for a game.
Bad game.
I can't remember, was it purple they didn't like? And you had to go, or was it red? Was it everything that was purple you had to spray red?
Everything was purple you had to spray red, because it was the Space Mutants going over everything, so you just spray can, you had to spray or knock paint onto or change it in some other way to a different colour, basically was the aim.
Yeah, I remember finding it terrible.
It's really hard to control and it's really difficult as well.
Do you remember a camera looking a bit?
Can't remember.
You're on the street, the first, you're like past more taverns. You can do prank phone calls to them and stuff.
Oh, yes. I think I know what you mean.
And they were very good prank phone calls, very cleaned up prank phone calls.
Yeah, IP freely. Yeah. Is this during the time when Acclaim had the Simpsons license?
Acclaim did it, yes.
Basically drained it for all it was worth, in the same way they had the WWF license and the Spider-Man Marvel Comics license for a while. And Acclaim just basically absolutely would put out any shit with a cartoon series on it.
Yes.
Yeah, and pretty much, yeah, I thought that would be the case.
Right. So I didn't like that one. I've tried to just name the games I did like. My favourite Simpsons game was Bart's Nightmare. Did anyone play Bart's Nightmare?
Is this the Super Nintendo one?
Super Nintendo, yes.
Yes, I think I can recall this one.
This was, I found, much better. The premise of which Bart's fell asleep and needs to complete his homework for the morning.
Right.
Of course, you dream that you're completing random tasks like fighting Itchy and Scratchy, and magically that does your homework for you.
Oh, right. Only it was like that easy when you're in school.
Yeah, so the more homework you get, the better grade you get and hope to get your A+.
Right.
However, even if you complete the game, you've still got so many points to get your A+. I never did it. It's very odd. There was the Bartzilla level and the Bartman level.
Uh-huh.
And then the very crappy Maggie's Temple. I don't know if anyone remembers that.
No.
Oh, it was hard. I never did that one. But that was probably my favourite Simpsons game. It was It was based on the first series, and it tells because it was just things weren't right, colours weren't right, and there wasn't many characters in it, and it could have been done so much better if it was done a bit later on.
Okay.
Because they didn't have as many characters and things back then. Which is a shame, I think they missed it. They should have done Boss Nightmare 2, but they decided not to touch it again. Then, quickly, it was on the PC, The Virtual World of Springfield.
Oh, I have
I remember well. Seeing that.
Has that passed everyone by or not? No?
I remember
no,
seeing I it, but I've one. Never played it.
It's basically, it was kind of not really a game, it was more, I don't know what you call it.
It was more like a map of Springfield you could explore.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty much what it was. It was fun. I mean, I wouldn't like sit down and play for hours, but it was a fun little game you could play on, which I quite enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got onto the PlayStation run of things, which was never ending. Simpsons yep. Road Rage, Simpsons Wrestling.
That game was fucking terrible.
you had Simpsons like. Grand Theft Auto style game as
was
well.
Was it Simpsons Hit and Run?
Hit and Run.
Was yeah. it?
I actually completed that.
I remember Simpsons Hit and Run being alright.
Oh, yeah, right. It wasn't bad.
I think I had it on the GameCube at one stage.
PS2 myself.
Yeah. It wasn't bad, I thought. But a kind of Grand Theft Auto rip.
Yeah, the Simpsons seemed to do a lot of things around that time with driving games and the rest of it, I thought it was flogging the dead all sorts.
Well, I think there was a spate they went through of, I don't think they've even recovered from it yet, where they just basically decided what was popular at that time and wrapped a Simpsons license around it.
Yeah.
Yes, pretty
and
much.
And like, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, it was, oh yeah, it's Grand Theft Auto. Yeah, we'll have a Grand Theft Auto game. Call it Simpsons Hit and Run. Out the door. You know. So,
yeah, because it was Crazy Taxi, wasn't it? It's called it Simpsons Road Rage or something like that.
Yeah, it was Crazy Taxi. Yeah,
there was a Crazy Taxi style game with the Simpsons on as well, wasn't there?
Yep.
And obviously the Simpsons Wrestling was just a hiding to nothing, if you ask me.
Oh, it was awful.
On one game I have missed out, if I just rewind slightly, Krusty's Super Fun House.
Which I was hoping you would mention, because in some strange twist, I played that today.
Ooh, Mega Driver, hey. Super Nintendo version. Don't think there's much difference. Oh, on your thing, right. Because you've obviously, Krusty's been infested by rats in his funhouse. And he's got to use, it's a bit like Lemmings. Kind
yeah,
of
I was going to say, it's essentially Lemmings. It's, once again, it's what's popular at the moment.
Does anybody remember The Lost Vikings?
Yes.
It reminds me a bit of that as well.
Three Vikings doing different things.
Yeah, my sister got obsessed with Lost Vikings on the Super Nintendo.
I got fairly obsessed with it.
Totally obsessed with it. Carry on, Simpsons.
Krusty's Super Fun. Yeah, it was good, Krusty's Super Fun House. I remember that was one of the early games for the Super Nintendo. It was quite good puzzly. It was quite difficult in places as well. But I just bring up to date, which I think is one of the last Simpsons games they brought out, was just called The Simpsons Game. Has anyone played that?
I played that.
Yep.
And I thought it was very good for what it was. I was quite impressed by it.
This would be the Simpsons game which you get the achievement for pressing start.
Easiest achievement ever.
Yeah.
Well, I've only got it on the PS2, so I didn't get that achievement, I'm afraid.
I enjoyed what I played of it. I didn't complete it, sadly, because I just got a bit...
I think, ironically enough, that was the last brand new PS2 game I bought, was the Simpsons game.
Right. Yeah,
I'm fairly sure it was, because I got it after Christmas one year, because I thought, oh, that looks pretty good. I played a demo in the shop, and I thought, bloody hell, that looks pretty good, and I was very impressed with that, very impressed with that. So who knows what Simpsons games are coming up next?
Yeah, the Simpsons game I remember the most of, and I have the happiest memory of, is actually the arcade game.
Oh, how did I forget that one?
Yeah, exactly. I thought he's going to mention the arcade game. He's going to mention it. No, he's not mentioning the arcade game.
Oh, of course I know the arcade game very well. Yes.
I found this with a mate of mine when we were taken to Lightwater Valley for the day. And we should have been going on light rides and roller coasters and stuff. We found an arcade and just basically pumped money into the Simpsons arcade machine.
As you should.
With two other kids that we just met randomly, and we just had four-player gamers of it all the time.
Who were you then, Cameron?
I think I ended up being Marge.
The Hoover.
With the Hoover, whacking guys on the head with it.
You've got Lisa with her skipping ropes.
Yeah, Bart's got a skateboard.
Yeah, Ford and Homer just use his fists.
Yay, violent bastards.
That was great, and you had like double team moves you could do as well.
It was pretty cool.
It was, but again, it was early on, and it was the same as the other one, yeah.
But was it Konami that made it?
Yes, I believe.
Yes, was it not just... Exactly, was it not just the same kind of engine as... the Ninja Turtles.
Very similar. I don't think it was
Turtles,
identical. It was very
X-Men,
similar.
Imagine that, but with Simpsons on it, and that's pretty much it, essentially.
True, yeah. What was popular at the time? Stick a Simpsons license on it. Out the door.
Mr. Burns was the last boss of that, by the way.
Yes, he was.
I never got that far. No,
Mr. Burns was the final
boss. I only
ever
saw the end of the game because I YouTubed it randomly the other day.
Yeah, you had, like, I think after level 2, there was a giant crusty balloon was the boss.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Like a ball it thing,
like,
almost.
Had the hole,
yeah.
And you kept punching it and it kept getting smaller and smaller.
And do you remember the bonus levels?
No. Ooh.
When there was 4 years lined up and you had pumps and you had to wiggle the joystick to pump up your balloon to fly off. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
Nice.
That was mental.
Yeah, see, good reminiscence.
Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed that. It's fantastic. I can't think of any other Simpsons games.
None decent ones. I've read the list and the stuff for Game Boys and things like that, but there's not. I think some of them might have been American only releases as well. Mm. But for me, that was my sort of favourite ones out of
the arcade
or infamous ones as well that I've passed up on there. I can't think of anything else off the top of my head. I'm sure there'll probably be more knocking around. If there's anything decent, I might mention them next month's Emporium.
Excellent. Good stuff.
But for now, I'm turning the open sign to closed putting the lock on the door, and you'll have to wait till next month.
Okay, no problem.
I'm thinking about Nurse Emmanuel, and I'm going to go to sleep.
Right, fair enough. Well, on you go, out the door.
Again, long time no see. Tonight I am taking on the zombie classic Left 4 Dead 2. I am playing the part of the black girl, Rochelle, who I imagine had a tough childhood and is now banded together with the rest of this 18 motley crew even, to take on the zombies. I have my weapon, I have chosen a non-chugga-chugga gun, and I'm following the black man, who's called Coach, who seems to be wearing a backpack. Oh, God, I got zombie juice in my eye. Ah, you didn't, I can't see. Does this go away? I'm outside. I'm in the Whispering Oaks. Oh, there's a fat man. Oh, a booger vomited on me. What does that mean? Oh, Christ. Shoot, back. Shoot. I can't see a fucking thing. Da-da-da-da-da. Ah, die.
You've been vomited on.
Why are you not helping me then? Get me clean. Bring me wipes. Bring me wet wipes. Are there no wet wipes? Oh, I like this method of just standing in the corner, actually. It seems that I've got clear aim. Die. Oh, you're throwing one. That's quite exotic.
No, it leapt on me.
Oh.
If that happens again, you need to shoot it.
I don't know how to shoot. I can't run. How do I run? I seem to be walking. How do you run? I'm still just walking. This is a gentle stroll through Zombieland. Oh, I'm running. Yeah, I'm running. Oh, zombie. Oh, not zombie. Oh, guys, a zombie. Oh, no, it's you. Sorry. Very pretty little carnival. Ooh, crowbar. I can't see any zombies. Where is it? Oh, no, is that you?
Stop shooting me!
Sorry, I can't see which is you and which is zombie. Ah, zombie! Zombie. Oh my god, that one's got a jug. Oh, it's a person! Oh my god, it's using a person as a battering. Oh, it used me as a battering ram. Oh, that's bad. Surely I shouldn't be able to be used as a battering ram. Oh, they're eating me. They've got my legs. Get them off my legs. Thank you. Okay, we're good. Let's run. Where are we running? Oh, that's a zombie. She sucked. Zombies. I'm liking the blood. It's very graphic. Oh, X for... I've got a weapon. I don't know what I've got. It could be ammo.
No, you've picked up some flaming stuff. Just drop it. That's better.
Okay. We're running through a warehouse. We've killed a zombie. This isn't very... This looks like the back end of, like, back lot 2 or Universal. I'm seeing no zombies. Oh, my god, I just found zombies. Oh, they keep puking on me. This is really unsanitary. Oh, I'm dead again. I think I'm dying. Can you come save me? Oh, somebody's on fire. It's not me. I'm watching the fire, but I think... Now my legs are on the fire. My legs are on fire. I am flaming. Oh, I'm alive. I'm so alive. And I'm running around again. Oh, Nick's healing me by doing some sort of voodoo. Is that normal?
He's using a first aid kit.
He hasn't got one in his hand. He just made some really obscene rubbing gesture around my leg. Surely that's not normal. This is encouraging very naughty things. It's like Zombieland, which was a movie. Oh, I found zombies. I found a cluster of zombies. What's the plural for zombie? Oh, zombies. But I found like a cluster of them. Is it like a nest?
No.
A grouping, a shoal of zombies. A pod of zombies. Surely it's a pod.
It's a shamble of zombies, actually.
Really? Is that grammatically correct?
Yep.
Oh, right, cool. Well, I've come across a shamble of zombies. One's trying to eat my arm. Die off my arm. My arm is not for you. Oh. Get off that choo-choo train. That is not for you either. There is nothing on this playground ride attraction which says zombies can eat it. Oh, that's you again. Sorry. I've got to stop shooting you. Oh, how ironic. We're now standing in front of a target range. Huh. Almost like they're encouraging us to aim at zombies. Die. Oh, that's you again. Sorry. The black man seems to have just told me I've got to learn to shoot, boy, which seems incredibly stereotypically racist and insulting. Just because I have no idea what I'm doing. Oh, look, it's a baby zombie! Oh, no, it's
no,
just...
No, that's a witch!
Oh, my God. What does that mean? She's nude! Oh, she's wearing very ugly underwear. I killed her, though. Surely that's a good thing. Surely killing a witch is a really good thing.
I'm still not healthy.
Was that bad? Alright, well anyway, just as we're about to be attacked by another shamble of zombies, I now have to... Well, now I'm going to cover one over my time. But you'll be glad to know I've survived 5 minutes of Left 4 Dead. Thanks very much, guys. Bye!
That's it for another month. Episode 2.8 is in the bag. If this has all gone according to plan with all the sort of pre-production, yes, we've done some pre-production... Then this probably should have been one of the more varied episodes of Break for Frogger, and it's probably getting to the point of what we always thought it was going to be, in that we always wanted little individual articles and different voices throughout the entire podcast.
Yeah, we always perceived ourselves as a magazine show.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like a magazine, an audio version of, basically, where you've got different voices, different stuff happening, and it's just kind of got broken up from just us four talking around a table. All the time.
So the pre-production may get us laughed at on Twitter.
Yeah, it might get us laughed at on Twitter, but as long as it's made a good episode and people appreciate it and get in touch with us all on Twitter and say they appreciate it and email us at breakforfrogger@gmail.com.
Oh, nicely done.
Say so. Nicely done. That say, I liked Break for Frogger and use the hashtag Break for Frogger. Yes. And that's B-R-A-K-E, not break as in Kit Kat. then it'll all be fine, it'll be good, and it'll be worth doing. It'll bring a warm glow to our hearts. We'll go home happy, productive, wonderful men of the world. We'll have a sense of self-esteem and achievement.
If they could also email in red or blue, that would also help.
Yeah, you also
candy striped.
Yeah, you also got to email in Al's choice of pipes for his washing machine. What colour do you want Al's 2.5 meter hose to be?
Are you really going to wait for a month before you plumb in your washing machine?
No, Trance. I need it straight away, though.
Fucking reek. Anything like that.
But if you really want to care and want to give us an opinion on it, email us anyway.
Exactly. So there you go. It'll be fine. It'll be all good. Anyway, if you want to get in touch with me on Twitter, then I'm on there as @CrippleH.
You can find me on there at Runaway Bomber. I'm back.
My Twitter's all knackered. I need a new iPhone, which will be coming next month, by
still,
the way.
Yeah, you've got to update your iPhone, haven't you? You've got 3G at the moment.
Yeah, I'm up there.
Which you've never actually updated the software on.
No, I don't trust it. I want to get a 5. I want to get a 5, but I don't know when they're out.
Because you don't trust it?
Yes.
Okay, fair enough. And lastly...
and you'll find me at Wandering Yoon on Twitter.
Marvellous. Go on the blog, breakforfrogger.com, to read occasional waffles and probably waffles? Try... waffles, yeah. Ooh. As in bird's eye potato.
Waffly versatile.
Waffly versatile.
That was my line you pinched there, Tom.
Oh, no. Not having it. I might actually finish my L.A. Noire comparison story, spoiler article, and death in video games eventually until I keep re-editing the bloody thing and thinking I hate it.
And obviously we've still got our two Welsh contributors.
Yes.
So, you know, keep an eye on the blog.
Keep an eye on the blog.
Things will be a-coming.
They really, really are cool, the two of those. Anyway, it's a goodbye from us.
It's a goodbye from him.
Yes, bye. Exactly. There's a two Vonnies bit that never quite works with four, is there?
No, it doesn't.
Never mind. Onwards we go, into the night, away to the old gods. Fury Ace. Fury Ace. Fury Ace. Fury Ace. Fury Ace.
That's Fury Act 3. Next month on Break for Frogger.
Imagine that Patrick Stewart extended commentary in pornography.
Lo, look, he bends her over and takes her up the ass, giving her a good English rogering.
God.
He knows within his mind that what he has done is most enjoyable.
He has boldly gone where no man has gone before.
Oh, there we go. Winner! Winner!
Ding, 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 ding. We have a winner.
That's...
that needs to stay in somehow.
That does need to stay in somehow.
Alan, you broke Cameron.